Good evening, everyone. We are live. Pancakes and Power Slams presented by Crave Wrestling. I am your host, Chris Featherstone, along with, as always, the Ryan Fuqua.
Good evening, all our Crave Wrestling fans out there.
Oh, yeah. We are got a lot to cover this week, as we do every week. Definitely encourage your calls, as always. Call in early, 347-884-8452. Once again, the number is 347-884-8452. Call in and participate in the live chat as well. Just to get your thinking caps on the flavor of the week topic, this week would be wrestling gear, best and worst, and how wrestling gear can influence someone's wrestling career. So looking forward to talking about that. But in the meantime, we will go on to Raw this past Monday. We will go on with the matches here. We had CM Punk go against Mark Henry. CM Punk defeated Mark Henry. And Jericho interferes on the Titantron at the end of the match, makes the match at Extreme Rules official, and it will be a Chicago street fight. Now, honestly, it wasn't a bad match between CM Punk and Mark Henry. Just a couple things. Just a couple of things. We had a interesting little break there. Just a couple of things that I noticed that was pretty interesting is that Mark Henry did not have an entrance coming on the show on UK, and this is the show for the this is the match for the WWE title. And it just showed Mark Henry. So that pretty much spoiled the outcome of the match right there. He didn't have any type of televised entrance. I'm sure he had an entrance in the UK. And the second thing that I was very interested about was the finish of the match. Now, CM Punk had a nice little spot. He had the chair, you know, he was carrying the chair, and he did a kind of like an elbow drop kind of thing on the chair, on Mark Henry. But the chair hit Mark Henry chair to face. Now, there's this big thing going on for the past couple of years, two, three or so years, about no chair shots to the head. Now, I'm not the biggest anatomy buff, but I thought the face included was a part of the structure of the head. So CM Punk should be fined for that. I'm not sure if they approved it beforehand, but that was just an interesting tidbit that I got from the match.
Yeah, and if I'm not mistaken, didn't Henry run into the chair head first in the corner?
Yeah.
So that's still, I mean, even though that's them writing that up, that's still kind of iffy there. But, yeah, I was happy that they started Raw with this match. Even though we were able to predict the outcome pretty much, it was still actually a pretty good match. Mm-hmm. And it's safe to say England loves CM Punk. Man, that crowd was really behind him. I thought they were in Chicago for a second. Jeez.
Yeah.
Only thing, just another week, man, Henry being a spot filler. So, I don't know, man. Henry is the world's strongest spot filler right now instead of the world's strongest man. I like the outside the ring action, like before the first commercial break. They had a lot of outside the ring stuff. Wasn't too crazy, but yeah, it was okay. Good finish though, since it was no DQ, and CM Punk can't lift up, I'm sure he can't lift up Mark Henry for the GTS, and they didn't want to have Henry tap, so that was a good finish.
Yeah. Then we find out, you know, I guess the question is, you know, what's next for Mark Henry? We know what's next for CM Punk, but not so much Mark Henry. So, you know, I'm sure that, you know, he can get into a decent feud with someone on Raw, I guess, with this split just kind of out the door. I really don't know, you know, where he could be if he stays on Raw. You know, maybe a Zack Ryder, David and Goliath type thing. You know, maybe that'll work for him, but I don't know if I don't know if they'll be even willing to invest time to do that. And like you said, it just may be the spot filler role that he'll be for a while, because I don't, with the title hunt like it is, and with some rumors of, we'll talk about later, of a certain person being in the hunt after this Jericho and Punk feud, it doesn't seem like Mark Henry will be anywhere in the title picture anytime soon. So, yeah. Let's go to the R-Truth and Teddy Long segment. I had to say something about this because just R-Truth on the mic is just golden to me every time, and he just does a great job, and he's just hilarious every time he gets on the mic. And he was I don't even remember what his name was, but I know his accomplice was Little Jimmy Watson, and they were on a quest to they're on a quest to try to find Theodore Long a job. And segment two, we'll just put both of the segments together. Segment two ended up being him finding him a job, well, Little Jimmy Watson finding him a job, and it ended up being the general manager of SmackDown, which, he was already the general manager of SmackDown.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
That was a nice little little spot for R-Truth with his comedic role, and you know, maybe it'll catch on. There was a point of time where he was in the world title picture. I don't see that happening anytime soon, but or really ever, if that. But the good thing is, the WWE is really getting some good stuff going on with the comedic roles, and like Santino, kind of Brodus Clay, but R-Truth, I think he'll do a good job, you know, staying in this slot, and you know, hopefully he'll get some more television time and more mic time, because every time he was on the mic, he's incredibly funny.
Yeah, I love Truth, silly guy. At first I was thinking, like, man, does he need to be a heel to be funnier? You know, because, I mean, that's when he was in the main event at the paper, at the one pay-per-view with Cena. Mm-hmm. He was a heel, and also usually funny heels work. But if they keep just making sure they're at least giving him some, you know, backstage time, a little bit of promos to cut like that, just to keep him relevant, I like that. That's cool.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, that can definitely work. I mean, it makes me smile, makes me laugh. So that's good.
Yeah. Yep. Let's go forward here to Santino versus David Otunga. We saw Santino get the victory for the event, for the match, and it was good, because I don't think that David Otunga is anywhere near ready to be a United States champion yet, and it just really wouldn't work with him. I like Otunga. He's got some promise, and that's That's a lot saying, you know, coming from me, because I didn't like Otunga at all. I thought he was just a waste of space, and he was just the worst person in both the Nexus and the new Nexus. I'm very, very surprised that they found a good spot for him. And I've liked him ever since the lawyer gimmick has emerged, and I think that, he's got some promise with him. I'm not canceling out the fact that he could be U.S. champ. Actually, wouldn't be totally opposed to it, but just not now. Santino's still hot, and people still love him. And taking the belt off of him right now would be a little bit too early.
Oh yeah, yeah. It's good to see, since they were in England, it's good to see Santino play it up. You know, they love their soccer over there. So.
Yeah.
And
the jersey.
He's Italian. Yeah, he's Italian, so I know he's in soccer, too. So that was pretty cool of him to do that. Like I said, each week, still feels right seeing Otunga out there. Only thing is, I kind of think he may need Laurinaitis in his corner. Like, when we see Otunga, we may need to see Laurinaitis.
Yeah.
But then I don't want to kind of make the sky the limit for him with that. But who knows? Maybe one day we'll see him as U.S. champ. And one of my buddies said that if we do see him as U.S. champ, maybe one day it could be a face turn on Laurinaitis. So... that's not totally out of the picture. I'd never even thought of that. I guess I thought of Otunga as a career heel, but anything can happen in double E, as Vladimir Kozlov would say. But real quick, I did want to say this about Santino. I seen a tweet yesterday from WWE. I believe yesterday was his 5th year anniversary in WWE. He debuted 5 years ago yesterday against Umaga and won the IC strap. So any listeners out there, if you want to see that, I watched that clip on YouTube. Had a run-in by Bobby Lashley, and it was pretty funny. McMahon was out there cutting the promo on the mic and everything and calls in Santino to the ring. And, yeah, so.
They were in Italy, right?
Yes.
Yeah,
Santino. He was in great shape. I mean, he's not slouched now, but he was in. Oh man, 5 years ago, it's crazy.
And he came from the crowd in street clothes, if I'm not mistaken.
Yes.
Yeah.
Good for him, though. 5 years later.
Yeah. For those who don't know, he was in the developmental. I believe at that time it was Ohio Valley Wrestling. And he played a kind of a monster heel role. I don't remember his name, but I know he played a monster heel, and his physique kind of made him that role. But he's still a short guy, so I would definitely like to see some clips of how he played that role. I don't remember seeing him in those matches in OVW as that role, but I do remember seeing pictures and. Some articles about that, so that's pretty interesting. One more tidbit about that match is to me there's no need for Chris Masters to be back in the WWE. I like Masters. I think he kind of got the shaft because he kind of. Got what was handed to him, and he did good. You know, he was a face in Superstars. He had some good matches, but they, you know, just abruptly released him. But I don't really think that there's a need for him to come back because I think David Otunga stole his spot and his spot light when it comes to the poses that he does in the beginning. It's kind of a hybrid between Chris Masters and Wade Barrett because he comes with the little dress code or whatever, and then I just I like Otunga, but that's got to go. It's the Mr. Olympia and all that crap. I'm not a big fan of that. So And so we will go on to the Lord Tensai interview with Josh Matthews. His worshiper, I don't remember his name. I know he came from FCW. I don't remember his name, though. He tries to speak, but Tensai interrupts him, and he speaks. And I don't remember what he said verbatim, but it was saying something about fearing the unknown. Okay. I mean, that's really what I have to say about that. I wasn't captivated. I wasn't intrigued. I wasn't even interested, honestly. There was nothing that really came from that interview other than the fact that, you know, he spoke in Japanese. When he left or when he got released, he may have not known Japanese then, but he knows Japanese now. So kudos to his Japanese knowledge now, I guess. I mean, that's really all I have to say about that interview.
Yeah, I was just shocked. I was like, wow, Lord Tensai speaks. I guess if they're going to do that, well, first, I'm like you. I didn't take much away from it because I really don't remember what he said. So it's like, wow, he spoke, but I think it just caught people off guard because nobody expected him to speak. But, yeah, if he's going to speak, I guess just backstage promos and make them short and sweet. Let's not give him too much mic time, but I don't know what he has to talk about. But and. Of course, we'll get to that main event, but I guess it's just a big night for Tensai.
Yeah, from having very irrelevant nights weeks before. Yeah. Now, I'll let the listeners know my stance on Tensai by the end of the night. Speaking of interviews, the complete opposite to me was Brock Lesnar's video interview. I think it was. It accomplished every single thing that I believe it was intended to accomplish. The whole video packages thing, again, I think that's something that the WWE should use a lot more often because it still gives us the appearance per se of that wrestler, but not physical though, and. It wasn't a physical altercation, which is good because they're marking that up for next week, and they're billing that for next week, which is good. But, yeah, I mean, I know that, you know, they really didn't want him to shoot, but he kind of shoot a little bit, you know. And it was pretty interesting. It was definitely a UFC, I'm coming to get you type of interview.
Yeah.
And there are a few things I got from this, two in particular. Two that I really got out of in particular. He says, quote, this is quote, "There's nothing about Brock Lesnar that's fake." And when I heard that, I said, okay, are you, like, telling on the WWE right now, saying that the WWE's fake? because that shows the reality of Brock Lesnar and his UFC and things like that. So, you know, it's one of them things that you just kind of listen to in hindsight and probably the production team and, you know, everybody, you know, kind of listen to in hindsight and maybe was thinking, oh, okay, well, maybe that wasn't a really good line to put on the video package because it just kind of tells everything about us, that which is interesting. And one more thing, he said, quote, "I'm not a superstar." And he started saying a few more things. And they showed video footage of him, like, beating up people. Interesting little tidbit here. All of the little few seconds that they showed was all former WWE wrestlers, which was Matt Hardy, Spike Dudley, and RVD. And it kind of goes back to the WWE owns TNA statement that I made a week or two ago because they can just freely show RVD footage at their leisure. And
yeah.
they can't do anything, and TNA can't do anything about it because this is our footage. We own it. We can show RVD, you know, just get beat up, you know, by Brock Lesnar, and he was a top guy for a while, and rumors are saying that they're going to build him up to be a top guy again. But you know, making him a top guy rumored again, and just seeing Brock Lesnar just beat the crap out of him. I believe the footage that they show was him power bombing him through a table,
yeah.
Through an announcer's
yeah.
table. And I said, whoa, that is some deep stuff right there. WWE
yeah.
owns TNA.
Oh, yeah. The fake statement by Lesnar, I don't know if you recall, but I don't know however many months ago that was, not too long ago, when he kind of blasted WWE
mm-hmm.
and called it wrestling fake. So that's kind of weird to me, too. I didn't catch that. Now that you say it, though, it got me thinking about it. But, yeah, this was a UFC-style promo, a semi-shoot-style promo. I told everybody, watch out for Lesnar and these promos and these potato shots in the next year. I'm telling you, Lesnar's
yeah.
going to give us some good stuff. He's going to give us some moments here.
Yeah.
And then I think, too, with this promo, he was just trying his hardest to be a heel also.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But he still
yeah.
got that bad boy face type deal. Because, I mean, it's Lesnar being back is just it's absolutely huge. I didn't think
yeah.
we'd see him again, you know, but for right
Eight
now,
years.
It's absolutely huge. Yeah, yeah, so
mm-hmm.
I don't know, but I just look forward to more of it.
mm-hmm. Yeah, and of course, you know, from a money standpoint, they're gonna get all they can from Lesnar, and because they, you know, he only signed a 1-year contract, so. You know, they're gonna get all they can. I believe the contract is two Raws and a pay-per-view per month, if I'm not mistaken. Any of the callers can verify that through calling or chat if you want to, any of the listeners. But I believe it's two Raws and a pay-per-view per month. So they're gonna milk that, you know, till it's dry. So you know, and rightfully so. I mean, this is Brock Lesnar. I mean, this is someone who transcended wrestling, went to UFC, you know, became good in UFC as well. And you know, he really said all that, you know, in his interview. And you know, hey, his interview was legit. You know, all the things that he said, you know, was legit. I mean, of course, he, I guess, you know, when he made that statement about John Cena is someone because I left, if I was still here, he'd be carrying my bags. First of all, that's an interesting statement. And secondly, it makes you wonder, you know what I mean? Like, if
yeah,
Lesnar
oh, yeah.
was
yeah.
still around, would yep. Cena be the type of person? Because Lesnar was pretty much on top when he left. He left in what, 2003, I believe, WrestleMania,
oh,
what, 20?
2004.
Yeah, so it was 22?
Yeah.
Oh, 20, yeah, you're right.
20.
WrestleMania 20, with the match with Goldberg, and Austin was referee, so, and he won his first title, what, SummerSlam of 2002 against The Rock, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, he debuted I think it might have been.
Might have been
02.
It was 03? Okay.
Yeah.
So SummerSlam of 03 versus The Rock. And like, you know, like we always say, if there's a listener or someone that was in the chat room, they want to verify that. So we believe that he won his first undisputed title, I believe it was at the
yeah.
time, in 03. So, yeah, I mean, you know, you know what? I believe it was 02 because the world title came back in September of 02, and it came back because Lesnar was the undisputed champ and he got drafted to SmackDown. So,
exactly 2 years. So,
mm-hmm.
yeah.
Yep. So, yeah, he won it in August of 02. So, a little interesting fun facts, a little trivia there on the fly trivia.
Yeah.
Yeah, so you know that was very interesting tidbits that I got from that interview, and they showed they confirmed a little bit after that interview that Brock Lesnar and John Cena would be an Extreme Rules match, and you know there were some rumors that there were going to be no stipulation to this, but it's good that there is a stipulation because I don't see a reason not to have a stipulation at a gimmick pay-per-view. That just wouldn't make any sense, especially an Extreme Rules gimmick pay-per-view. So, yeah, it's good that they made that. So, onward to Kane versus Zack Ryder.
Cool.
Now, poor Ryder.
Can I just say something here? I'd like to start this one off. Because I thought of this last night. Seriously.
Go for it.
I told my friend while we were watching this, this is the prime example with Zack Ryder. We always talk about in WWE how guys aren't getting their shots. We say, you know me, I like Alex Riley. He didn't get his shot. I like Dolph Ziggler. He's not getting his top shot. But this is, they gave Ryder, they gave him mic time, they gave him a storyline, they gave him in-ring time, and he just didn't keep the top spot. And this is a classic case of somebody not capitalizing. So I don't know what happened here, but Ryder's team, he lost it. I don't know how, but maybe it was the storyline they put him in, but I kind of blame him more because when they give you your shot, I mean, you got to take it. You got to step on the gas, no brakes, you can't look back. I know it sounds cliche, but I just had to get that off my chest here because I felt like it was Ryder's opportunity and he just did not make the best of it because he'll never be as high as he was again. Now, maybe one day I'll eat my words and I'll be wrong, but I don't think he'll ever be back in that top spot that he was in. I mean, he was U.S. champ. He was out there. You remember when it was him, Daniel Bryan, and CM Punk that night?
They were
all champions.
I'll never forget that episode.
I don't think that'll ever happen for Ryder again. So, I mean, that's a case of somebody getting their chance and not making the best of it.
Yeah. Very well said. I couldn't agree with you more. He had it. He had the opportunity. And you're right. I mean, you know, put the pedal to the metal. Yeah, like, it was a no contest. It was so bad that it was a no contest. and you're right. I mean, just imagine There's so much to say about this. You know, they wouldn't do that with CM Punk. You know what I mean? They wouldn't do that with Jericho. They wouldn't do that with Orton. You know, they wouldn't do that with Cena. And it just proves that you can blame it on the writers, you can blame it on the booking staff, but, you know, if to me, you know, there were some questions going on even when he won the U.S. title. I saw a lot of reports and I saw a lot of, you know, video interviews and different things about, you know, it seemed like the fun was in the chase. And when he became U.S. champ, it just became kind of mundane. You know, it was just kind of like, okay, he's champ and no more. More petitioning and things like that. He tried to petition again with the whole being a member on Team Teddy. You know, it didn't have the same luster at all. But it's sad because, you know, do you make him a heel? And when I think about that, it's like no, because he was a heel before he started to, you know, become popular. Yeah. And really, his internet television show made him as popular as he was at that time. But it's like it's really, really hard to figure something out. You know, you think about, do you throw him in with Kane? But that wouldn't make sense because Kane is, you know, feuding with Orton. Do you throw him in with Mark Henry? I mean, the mid-card titles are both worn by faces now. So there's not really anything that you can do with Zack Ryder. And then Eve and Zack Ryder, they're, whatever they had is totally out the door now. And it's really sad because I'm all about pushing the mid-carders. I'm all about, you know, ascending the mid-carders and giving them an opportunity. But even so, though, here's a difference between Ziggler and Ryder. For instance, I can see Ziggler just be thrown in a world title match at any time. You know what I mean? Even Swagger, you know, even on a minor pay-per-view, if he, you know, Swagger, they'll build him up a couple of roles, and, you know, it'll be him and Punk or something in June or July, just a minor pay-per-view. But there's no way in the world that I could see that with Ryder. Just imagine Jericho wins. Zack Ryder would not be a contender. He'll probably be way down on the list. He wouldn't even make the cut, you know. So, yeah, it's really sad. It's really sad.
I was just going to say, I don't know what direction the pudding, you know, like you said. It was just fighting for it, fighting for the U.S. title just to get a shot at it, and then he gets it, loses it. The Eve thing, I just couldn't agree more. I have nothing for Zack Ryder. If you ask me to write up a storyline for him right now, I honestly could not. I mean, it'd probably take me a few days to come up with something.
I think you just started a new segment on Pancakes and Power Slams, right? Write the storyline. I think we may make it official. Write the storyline. And, you know, Zack Ryder, I really would spend some time. And that's something that, you know, I do. And you know, if the listeners like that, you know, verify that on the chat or Twitter at Crave Wrestling. But, yeah, if you like that idea, we'll go with it. Book the storyline or book the wrestler. Yeah. you're right. I can't. The mid-card title is the U.S. title right now. Santino has it. You have Swagger and Ziggler that is doing, you know, that's something right now, kind of feuding with Brodus Clay and. It's sad. to think about what to do with them and to find out that there's nothing to do with them. So, call in 347-884-8452. We will be taking calls very soon. Let's flood this area with some calls. We want to hear from you. Thank you all listeners that are listening. Thank you all people who are in the chat room right now. The number is 347-884-8452. We will also be taking tweets at Crave Wrestling. So feel free to tweet there as well. Facebook, search Crave Wrestling or www.facebook.com/Crave Wrestling. We will go on. About the Zack Ryder, after the no contest, Kane starts talking about Randy Orton, which is something we hear all the time. And
a one-liner, family one-liner.
Another family storyline that I guess Vince McMahon is thinking that something to do with families is, I don't know, maybe he's just missing his family or something, and I want them to write that, because there's two family storylines on, you know, that splitting each show, and either one of them is just not, I'm not compelled to care. So going on to the Kofi Kingston, AJ, and Daniel Bryan backstage segments. A few things that I got from this. Firstly, Kofi Kingston was a heel in the UK. He was not. There was hardly any support for him.
Yeah,
I would I would accredit that solely to going against Daniel Bryan. I think they kind of set themselves up for that. I think they're still denying the elephant in the room. It's just they yeah. they're still doing it. It's the yes is organic, it's natural, and I will continue to say it. There's a part of me. There's a big part of me that really wants to write an article about this on a Bleacher Report. He officially changes his submission maneuver from the LaBell lock. He says that he believes that he's greater than Jane LaBell, the person that the move is named after. And so he changes it to the yes lock. And he got some yes chance from UK from doing that. They concurred with that, according to the UK, because they probably don't know who Jane LaBelle is, honestly. So So he changed it to the yes lock. And I don't know if anybody counts. I'm just real meticulous like this when it comes to wrestling, because there's some really big things and small details a lot of times. He said yes 25 times.
Oh, wow.
And the UK was there every step of the way. They said it 25 with him. So he might have even said it more times, but they cut to the commercial after 25 times. So I'm telling you, the UK loved Daniel Bryan. It was very interesting to me.
Yeah, very so interesting, in fact, that I don't even know what to say here with this match, because, as you said, Kofi was the heel. Like, I'm so pro Bryan now that I don't know. It was just weird. Like, I know you're supposed to be heel, but it felt like face versus face, just because I'm in the Daniel Bryan just that much more now. Like, before he was face, you told me about him and how he had wrestled around the world, whatnot. And it was just one of them things. I respected him, but I didn't have any feelings about him. Mm-hmm. But now I'm like, ever since he's been here, I've been pro Bryan, Daniel Bryan, and I love it. So I don't know. Yeah, I think it was wrong for them to have him go against Kofi. It didn't work for me. But the yes lock, changing it to the yes lock, is pretty cool.
Yeah. You know, as a traditionalist, you know, for the most part, you know, it's one of those things that, you know, the LaBell lock is a traditional name to me. But, you know, it's the yes lock, and, you know, it's not a terrible thing to me. I can deal with it. I'm cool with it. Just I remember another time when the Randy Orton used to do the Garvin stomp, or the Ronnie Garvin stomp, and you know, he changes it to the Orton stomp, and I'm like, oh man, don't do that. You don't change the Garvin stomp. I remember, you know, watching that back in the day in the NWA when he used to do the Garvin, even, you know, the early 90s in the WCW when he did that Garvin stomp. And then, you know, Orton tried to do it and changed it to the Orton stomp, and just as you can see, he don't do it anymore. So you don't change the name if you know that there's a chance that you won't surpass that move and eclipse the former wrestler in popularity as far as the move is concerned. And I think that Daniel Bryan has done that. I think that, you know, if Jean LaBelle, I don't, you know, I'm sure that, you know, Jean LaBelle would concur if he had the opportunity to. So, yeah. So we will go forward here to the John Cena promo. I will say this. I am not a Cena fan, but as I've shared in previous episodes, I was a three count away from putting those three fingers up apiece, and But I tell you what, I am not as anti-Cena as I've been. And also, his promos, his promos are good. His promos are really good. I gotta give it to him. It was good. It was poignant. It was emotional, and he convinced me. He convinced me. He admitted that he was afraid of Brock Lesnar. You know, he gave him some props, and you know he was very dynamic in it. And I said, hey, you know, I mean, I know he's always been good on the mic, but he's been really good on the mic since I've really paid attention. John Laurinaitis comes out and he puts him in the Extreme Rules match versus the Mystery. He puts him in the Extreme Rules match that night. There's a Mystery opponent, and he confirms the contract signing next week at the 3-hour Raw. So that was pretty interesting. And it's good that that I'm paying attention to the poignancy of his promos now.
Yeah, it was okay for me. You know, I'm a newly converted Cena fan, so I'm okay with this. I just didn't know about the yelling and the. I know it's a heartfelt speech, but the yelling and must win thing. It kind of reminded me of last month when he was doing that with The Rock, and then he ends up losing. So I don't know. We'll see. We'll see if he gives all his emotional speeches and then loses again. But I don't know. It was too reminiscent of last month. So, but I guess he had to do something, some type of emotional thing here, and get aggressive.
Yeah. Then we had after the Kofi Kingston and Daniel Bryan match that we mentioned before with the interview. Daniel Bryan does defeat Kofi Kingston with the newly named Yes Lock. And just one little more tidbit there. The UK was chanting no when Kofi Kingston was striking. And he was the bona fide heel in that match. So,
yeah.
Brodus Clay wins. He beats Dolph Ziggler by disqualification, and there was some physicality between Vicky and Cameron and Naomi. For those who don't know, both Cameron and Naomi came from FCW. They both were in FCW. Cameron, for those who watched the newly resurrected Tough Enough that aired recently, a couple years ago, I believe. She was on the Tough Enough show, and she's a dancer now. And Naomi actually was a champion in FCW, and Naomi was on NXT as well. For those who didn't know that, so you know they both have wrestling experience. Naomi more than Cameron, but they both have reasonable experience. Naomi is actually pretty good in the ring. I've seen her wrestle, and they've she's done a good job. So that's all about that. The good thing is they're doing something with Brodus Clay now, and like I said before, that's a good thing. I'm pro that decision, and for instance, now if he would lose because he's in this feud with Vicky and Swagger and Ziggler, it wouldn't be as catastrophic as if he would have lost when he was doing squash matches. It wouldn't have been a good transition at all. But I can actually see him losing a match now by, for instance, if he's going against Ziggler at a pay-per-view and Swagger and Vicky's outside and they assist Ziggler to having a cheap win, I'll actually be okay with that, because to me it wouldn't hurt Clay. It would help Ziggler, so neither one of them would go down to me.
I thought in this match, I thought Cameron or Naomi would was going to get their hands dirty with Vicky there for a second, since I knew they were actually wrestlers, or sorry, superstars, divas, what have you. But as for this match, I wasn't sure what it was. Because it was still a Brodus Clay squash match, because it was quick, but it was just by DQ. So, I don't know, at least Ziggler didn't have to fall victim to the Brodus's, the Funkasaurus list of people who have been squashed, superstars who have been squashed within 2 minutes. I don't know, I guess we'll have to see where this one goes, because it looks like now that Santino, I thought it was going to be Santino and Clay, you know, feuding with Ziggler and Swagger, but I don't know, we'll see where this goes, if Clay's going to feud with the, this is another thing, like you said last week, Ziggler and Swagger, man, they've got to get some sort of name or something, so.
Oh, yeah, GTU, greatest team in the universe.
we'll see where this one goes.
Speaking of tag teams, we saw a very odd tag team of the Big Show and Kali defeating Primo and Epico. Interestingly enough, they actually said something about they said something about them tweeting about having TV time and things like that. That's kind of taboo, but it's good that you know, they said something about that to just kind of atone, you know, the fact that they haven't had any television time. But they, I mean, it was a no brainer that Show and Kali was gonna win. Poor Kali, he and AW is what they call him. His real, he went in ECW by Abraham Washington. I don't understand why they would just call him AW now. That, I don't know if that's going to last for long, because just a wrestler or a superstar or a manager being called AW was just kind of odd to me. poor Kali, like I was saying, just he gave. I don't remember who it was, Primo or Epico, but he gave one of them that big boot, and it just seems like a tree just came down. He couldn't even stay on his feet when he gave him the big boot, and I said, "Oh, just poor Kali. He's just so unstable as a wrestler. It's sad." But the finish actually wasn't too bad, though. The choke slam. Double choke slam, you know, combination that they did at the same time actually wasn't too bad. It just kind of showed their dominance as a tag team. So them as a tag team is just, you know, it's not good at all. But, yeah, I mean, if you do want some good out of it, I guess, you know, it's good to have that type of finish with it.
Yeah. I was just shocked that we actually seen the tag team champs. There was a fighting, so that's something you don't see every week, which I believe you should, because they're champions. But, hey, we've seen Kali, and I know this is two consecutive Raws. I don't know if it's three, but I was just like, wow, this is Kali's gotten two consecutive Raws. and then I was just... I know it was just to make it for two big men against the smaller guys, but it was still, I mean, here's your hashtag Super Show. I don't know why Big Show. Yeah, Big Show, SmackDown. I mean, I don't know why he was involved. So, yeah, I'm guessing it was just for it to make two large superstars. But the match, I like Show, and I think I still like Epico and Primo, but it just didn't get any reaction from me. The biggest thing for me was watching AW scouting agency. Because I'm like one of the few, I'm the minority here. I actually liked Abraham Washington when he was around for his first stint. So I don't know if I'll get any backlash from that. But I was okay with Abraham Washington. So I'm anxious to see where his character goes and what they have in store for him.
Yeah, one thing I am happy about is that he's not asking Mark Henry anymore, because that would not have been okay. I'm interested to see too, because I don't see him being, you know, with Epico and Primo, because they already have, you know, their manager. And then Big Show, he should not be a heel. And Khali, they tried to make him a heel when he was with Jinder Mahal, but that didn't work too well. So I guess he's just, you know, coming out and, you know, doing what he can. And, you know, eventually he's going to have his designated person that he's going to manage. So the main event we saw was John Cena against Lord Tensai in an Extreme Rules match. They referred to Jerry Lawler this time instead of Michael Cole. Referred to Tensai to be a former superstar again. Jerry Lawler referred instead of Michael Cole this time. So it's interesting that they're referring to him being a superstar again. I think they now out of ever, they probably should do it, because, you know, he's getting Albert chance every week, this week. And
it gives him more story on his character too. So I think they should do it.
Yeah, they were talking about how he was in the WWE and then he tried to, you know, then he left and got acclimated to Japanese culture and came back and blah, blah, blah. So, it makes sense. You know, it makes sense more now than before. So, but he wins. He beats Cena. He had some help. The worshiper, whatever his name is, I don't remember his name is, but they keep saying that that's who he is, the Tensai. So, and he gives Cena a couple kicks, and Otunga interferes. Laurinaitis had something to do with the two. So essentially three people helped him win. I don't know. We may differ on this one, and I know that I'm differing. A lot of other people have disagreed with me on this, but I'm still not sold on Tensai. It seems like they're trying too hard for me. I can see a Vladimir Kozlov, Sylvester Turkai back in the day when Elijah Burke used to manage him. Mordecai type of thing going on. They're trying too hard with him. He still has the Japanese writings that I guess he's supposed to make them look like tattoos, but they were obviously smearing both of them, the big Chinese print in the back and the small Chinese, Japanese, I keep saying Chinese, excuse me, the Japanese print in the back, the bigger one and the small ones in the front, they were obviously smearing. And just imagine him being in a longer match, him sweating, and by the end, you know, he's going to, like, reveal himself to be 100% Albert. So I'm not sold yet. I'm not, like I said before, you know, I was 95% just, you know, wanting them to throw it away. And there was still 5% on me that was just being rational and saying, you know, just keep it going. But, you know, if they're going to do this, the match itself was extremely boring to me. If it wasn't for Otunga and Laurinaitis, I mean, you know, this would have been a snoozer for me. He allegedly is supposed to be in a feud with Punk after Punk and Jericho's over. Punk can put on a good show. You know, he'll do a good job. But I still, I don't know. I mean, the thing is, Tensai could he can wrestle. I've seen him. He was good, yeah. You know, in Japan. He was decent in the WWE when he was Intercontinental Champion. You know, he had a couple okay matches with Kane. You know, his reign as an Intercontinental Champion was just very lackluster. But, you know, he could, you know, he has the potential to put on a good match. But it seems like this overhaul of a character is just kind of this kind of toning his potential down a lot, you know. So I'm not sold yet. I'm interested to know how you what you feel about that.
I'm not all the way sold as well, but for him to speak and you know, to win this match against Cena, I think it was definitely needed right now for his character, because he needed some type of direction. It only been about 3 weeks he's been doing these matches where he's been winning real quick, but I mean, so he got stale that quick. Didn't look stiff as usual, though. He's a little less stiffer. But as for you saying him and Punk after the Jericho feud, I'm definitely not a fan of that. I know Punk could, he's one of those guys, if you wrestle him, you kind of just let him lead, unless you're a Chris Jericho or Shawn Michaels, you know. It goes back to what I said about Alberto Del Rio. Stop just thrusting these people on us. Why can't Tensai just work his way towards it, having win a mid-card or a mid-level title, you know, here at SummerSlam or something, you know. I know that's a ways away. Maybe he can win it before that, but he doesn't need to be thrusted into world title spot like that, because he's not going to win. At least I would hope not. But I want to be okay with him, but I'm not all the way there yet. He's not awful. He's not horrible, but he's not good. Like, I'm not a fan yet. But I don't know. As for this match, it wasn't an Extreme Rules match.
Yes.
Yesterday. Yeah, yeah. There wasn't really, other than the stair steps, I can't remember anything extreme about it. But yeah, I was.
Maybe the interferences.
Yeah, yeah. But I don't know. I was just actually wondering, was Cena going to put him over? Because I was like, man, are they going to have him lose this quick? Or, you know, talking about Tensai. Mm-hmm. But I was shocked to see Cena put him over. Been a rough stretch for Cena lately.
Yeah, a small little
yeah.
streak here.
Yeah, yeah. But it was a big win for Tensai. See where he goes from here. But yeah, I'm a little more sold on Tensai than you, but I'm not all the way there. Let's just put it that way. Yeah. I think he should be on mid-card status. There's nothing wrong with him chasing the Intercontinental Championship. I mean, it's against... Yeah, he could feud with Big Show after the Rhodes feud. There's nothing
wrong
with that.
I'll be fine with
that. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, we'll see. We'll see as the weeks progress what they really want to do with Tensai. It looks like they're going for broke really now. You know, I guess they don't want to seemingly they don't want to just kind of put their foot in their mouth and say we made a mistake. So we'll see how it goes. So interesting, we're all together, and we have a little. We're running short on time here. Call in 347-884-8452. Participate in the live chat. We've got some people on the chat right now, and we would love to take your calls as well. 347-884-8452. Got about a half hour left to cover TNA and ROH and the Flavor of the Week topic. So we'll just we'll go quickly with the Super SmackDown Live. I'll read the results, and like we do every week, I'll read the results and highlight the show as a whole. There's a lot that happened on the show as far as the altogether the programming is concerned, but all in all, Randy Orton defeated Mark Henry, got into some Kane stuff with Bob Orton in the back. Benny Kamer comes out and cuts his heel promo. Benny Kamer is from Pro Wrestling Ohio. And Ryback comes out and just totally annihilates him. Hillbilly Jim, Ted DiBiase, Pat Patterson, and Tully Atlas was shown in the back. The Usos defeat Heath Slater and Tyson Kidd. Very odd team. Tyson Kidd is a babyface now. That was very interesting to me. Mick Foley comes out and commentates. Piper's Pit with Daniel Bryan. Confirms a 2 out of 3 falls match with Sheamus at Extreme Rules. Kali, Natalya, and Alicia Fox defeated Drew McIntyre and the Bella Twins. Mae Young comes out and kisses Kali. Damian Sandow promo again. He attacks social media. Unico with Camacho defeated Hacksaw Jim Duggan with Sergeant Slaughter by DQ. There was a Dusty Rose and Cody Rhodes segment. And Big Show comes out again. And Daniel Bryan and Alberto Del Rio faced Sheamus in Oakland. Legends come out, beat up Ricardo Rodriguez, and Pat Patterson punches Michael Cole. Just a few things. We're very short on time here. A few things about this. Like I said, Ryback was looked good again. It looks really good. Laurinaitis put Sheamus on probation. Find some $500,000. I think that's $500,000 in Monopoly money, because that's just an astronomical figure, which just doesn't make sense. And Damian Sandow, again, I don't care. And then lastly, two more things. Howard Finkel came out and announced that was good. Two more things. Tony Atlas looks in great shape. I believe he has his own personal training center. And the highlight of the night for me was when Booker T, when Mae Young kissed Kali, Booker T said, "An old chicken makes good soup." And that was an actual LOL moment for me. So that was my highlight of the show.
Yeah, don't have much here. Just the Laurinaitis Sheamus thing. I don't think those two mesh well together. So hopefully, I don't have to see those two in the ring talking to each other on the mic again, because I just wasn't feeling that. But yeah, it was funny. I said I had my LOL moment and said, "Wow, big money!" When he said he just the largest fine in WWE history. Like that, yeah. I mean, I do a good Laurinaitis, but that was funny to me. and then it was kind of weird, like, why would they try to go in Sheamus's pockets for that storyline? It's a little different. And then the other thing, just Piper's Pit. First Piper's Pit in over 6 years, Cole said.
Around
talked about the mole being bitten off her face, and then that was the boogeyman eating the thing off of Jillian Michaels.
Yeah, yep.
Yeah, when she was in the cabinet.
The cabinet, yep.
Yeah, yeah. So that one was January 13th, 2006. But the crazy thing is, it seems like I've seen a Piper's Pit in between there, but maybe, I don't know.
It's probably a
WWE,
Raw.
WWE history books, too. So, yeah, you never know.
Yeah.
But it was
exactly.
Good to see Piper. Piper was out there. He was in shape. He didn't seem a little. He didn't seem drunk at all, like he had been the past few times I've seen him on WWE television. he was on point. I mean, he had my ears of attention. So did Daniel Bryan.
Mm-hmm.
Like I say it every week, I love him on the mic too. So it was good to see these two talk. And AJ's adorable. Yeah, it's always good to see her. And the announcement of the 2 out of 3 falls at Extreme Rules between Daniel Bryan and Sheamus. I'm excited that they're doing that, not just making it a regular match or anything watered down like, oh, yeah, it's just a chair match or something silly.
So, yeah.
Kudos to that, because you can kind of tell a story with a 2 out of 3 falls match.
Yeah,
that's about it. That's only 2 big things I really took away from this SmackDown.
Yeah. Cool. Well, we've got about 20 minutes, and so we'll skim through the Impact and the ROH here. We're going to take a call here very shortly as well and talk about the flavor of the week. So last week, Impact, we saw Eric Bischoff introduce his team for Lockdown, which is Bully Ray, Gunner, Christopher Daniels, and Kazarian. Gary Bischoff comes out and introduces Mr. Anderson. He gets disqualified versus Gunner. It was who gets the advantage on the Lethal Lockdown match. Motor City Machine Guns was confirmed to go against Samoa Joe and Magnus at Lockdown. Austin Aries defeated Christopher Daniels, which was a phenomenal, phenomenal match. Definitely had Ring of Honor written all over that match. Then we saw the Eric Young and ODB wedding. We also saw Bully Ray defeated AJ Styles to gain advantage at Lockdown, and Eric Bischoff and RVD, his return, was added to both teams, and we saw a Storm and Rude confrontation that it was a very good segment. I was actually pretty surprised that they had that type of segment. Going on to Lockdown, this past Sunday, Team Garrett defeated Team Eric. Magnus and Joe defeated the Motor City Machine Guns for to retain the television title. D-Fon defeated Robbie E to keep the television title. Real quick, little tidbit about that. He is the television champion, but from the last pay-per-view that he won to this pay-per-view that he defended, he was on TV 0 times. Crimson defeats Mac Morgan to continue his undefeated streak. Jeff Hardy defeats Kurt Angle. A big spot, cage spot, as I thought was going to happen. ODB and Eric Young defeated Sarita and Rosita to keep the knocked up tag team titles, is what they call it. And Bobby Roode retains the title versus James Storm in the main event. They did a bunch of hype on James Storm and makes the video and does the altercation and is waiting for this moment and just have him lose at one of their biggest pay-per-views of the night of the year. So that was pretty interesting to me.
You can go ahead. Sorry.
Yeah, that was pretty much a synopsis of Impact.
I don't have much. Not much for TNA. I just want to say that this show is getting me to look at it, you know, so I'm coming around on it more. But I'm just still a harsh critic, so, yeah. I'm coming around on it more. There are some guys I've noticed on there that I'm like, wow, well, I could have gave this a shot a long time ago and liked it more, but... Yeah, we'll see up here in the next few weeks how I feel. Hopefully I keep it up.
Yeah. Real quick on ROH, and then we'll take a call here. They had a Road Rage, was just a recap of the Showdown in the Sun, the day one. Very, very, very good competition. ROH, they have it. They've always had it in my eyes. Mike Bennett defeats Lance Storm. Good to see Lance Storm back in the ring. Very, very good match. Proving Ground match, the Briscoes defeated Shane Haste and Mikey Nichols, also known as TMDK, which I believe stands for the Mighty Don't Kneel. Kevin Steen defeated El Generico in the Last Man Standing match. Jimmy Jacobs turns heel, which is he's really known as a heel from his ROH history, turns on El Generico. Really, really good matches. I've followed always for a while now, and they've always delivered with their match quality. A couple things. ROH, I mean, Daniel Bryan or Bryan Danielson, he came from ROH, so of course I was not surprised to see to hear the yes chants from them. And another interesting chant that they had during the Mike Bennett and Lance Storm match was awkward silence. So I thought that was pretty interesting. So
yeah, Bennett and Storm. It had been a while since I've seen Storm, so that was a shocker for me. Last time I seen him, he was in, had a buzz cut and long tights, so my surprise.
It's in the singlet now.
Yeah, it was a good lengthy match. I liked it. The end was really cool for me because, I didn't know much about Prodigy here, and I really thought he was going to show some respect, and then when he does the heel thing, that was great for me. I always loved that. And then the main event, El Generico and Kevin Steen, that was good for me, man. I was shocked, because I was looking at these guys, are they really going to put on this good of a match? But, it was good. Nice amount of time, and the pace, they didn't slow down too much. Just the ending kind of confused me a little bit, but it was still pretty good, really good.
Yeah. Yep, cool. Well, we're going to take a call here, and we're going to see the caller, what the caller would like to discuss or his or her feelings. So just say your name, where you're from, and what are your thoughts about this past programming? 740 area code.
Of course, the programming was horrible. Raw's not really that good anymore. But other than that, how do they market Mark Henry the way that they do? They call him the world's strongest man. He's the biggest jobber that's been in the WWE for years. It bothers me because he's been in since the Attitude era. He's been in there forever. And the way that they just have him as the world's strongest man. However, he dominates 90% of the match, but at the last few minutes or last few seconds, he trips over his bootlaces and falls into the ring ropes, and it's over. 1, 2, 3, he's pinned. They could do a lot better with what they've got with him. It's just so unbelievable how they, CM Punk beats him, he falls into a chair. I've seen Mankind get hit in the head with a chair 15 times. Single-handedly, Mark Henry could beat the hell out of anybody in that locker room. But they market him as that. The world's strongest man, he jobs to everybody. It bothers me, and that's why I think WWE kind of went off course a little bit. They just, Brock Lesnar and John Cena could be a good build-up and a good pay-per-view. But, they're kind of the reasons I stopped watching Raw. I stopped watching WWE is because I don't get behind those guys because they're fake. So talk about it and give me some feedback.
So this is Derek, I'm assuming.
Yes, it is. Of course it is.
Yes, you didn't say your name at the beginning. So thanks
this
for all your
Derek
support.
This is Derek from Reynoldsburg, Whitehall area.
All right. Thanks so much for all your support, Derek, and your comments. Just real quickly about that, I can definitely see, how Mark Henry could be pushed a little more. Did a really good job pushing him on SmackDown. It was a gradual, kind of like what you're saying a lot, just kind of like a gradual push that they did, and he ended up beating Randy Orton. So I can definitely see how that makes sense.
I definitely agree, too. Like I said earlier, he's the world's strongest spot filler. So
yeah,
that definitely sums it up.
Yeah. All right, we're going to close the night with got about a little less than 15 minutes left. Thank you so much for all your support. And so we are going to talk about the flavor of the week. And it's about wrestling gear. And we will let Ryan go on with it.
My flavor of the week this week, it was going to be my best and worst wrestling gear, which it still is. And I'll let you know at the end of this here why I had to condense it to just my top superstar right now who as my favorite gear and my worst, I guess my bottom worst superstar who has my least liked gear and why. I'm going to read a little paragraph here that I put together when I was thinking about this. I went back and forth with this because there are many superstars, past and present, that have made an impact just with their attire alone. Mm-hmm. Think about Hulk Hogan with the red and yellow. He made it that so when anybody mentions red and yellow in any promotion, you're going to think about Hogan. Like, I don't know anybody else who even off the top of my head tries to come out to with red and yellow. I don't know if you can think of anybody.
Beth Phoenix did at WrestleMania, and I thought of Hulk Hogan.
He's got a monopoly on just that color combination.
Yeah.
I also thought of Ric Flair with the studded robe, Randy Savage with his signature stars on his trunk,
mm-hmm.
Piper's kilt, Slaughter's hat and glasses and camouflage, or Iron Sheik's curly toe boots. Oh, and did I mention Ultimate Warrior's face paint and tassels?
Oh, yeah.
And then you have the great Bret Hart. Great Bret Hart will always be remembered for wearing what? Black and pink.
Black and pink.
And, he even once got called out on it by Stone Cold Steve Austin, who is another guy who is synonymous by knee braces.
Just
simple knee braces. Yeah, and a vest. Like, that's crazy. And they go back and say that he's one of the first to ever just wear straight black. So that's pretty cool, too. But those are some guys that are defined in a good way. They're past and present that I've never liked. As I've told you before, for instance, present day John Morrison's attire. I liked Morrison, but I could never fully commit to being a full fan just because I didn't like the studded fur coat he wore to the ring, nor did I like the bedazzled pants with the fur at the bottom of the ankle. I know you said it was conducive to his style or his character, but I just could never wrap my head around it and get on board with it. And then you have guys like Alberto Del Rio. I know he's not defined by it, but you think about maybe years from now, we'll always think like, oh, this guy came out with his scarf,
mm-hmm.
a simple thing. And of course, people like Cena with the Mark Echo jean shorts. So that's crazy. This could be a long, we could sit here all night and talk about guys and their attires and who we like and who we don't like. So I figured I'd just do one up, one down from the current WWE roster to make it the easiest for myself, and then you can chime in as well. We may agree on the person we think is the top, but as for my current best, I would definitely, and I didn't think of this or didn't feel this way until I went to our last live event. We went to a SmackDown about a month and some change ago here in Columbus. The best right now, I would definitely have to say, would be Chris Jericho. I mean, first of all, his entrance jacket matched his background at WrestleMania. It doesn't get any more crazier than that. Like, who can do that and get away with it? And then the reason I say I didn't think about this until we went to the event is because his costume doesn't do much justice for him on television. When you're at the event, it's something with the lights shine down on his boots and trunks, and it sparkles.
Mm-hmm.
And you can't see that on TV. So I figure that's definitely one of the ones that's my top right now. And then for my worst, even though it's my guy now and I'm a newly converted fan, it's definitely John Cena. Just call me a traditionalist. Maybe I like people to wear trunks and tights, but the jean shorts, the Mark Echo shorts, I've never totally been able to get on board with it. The tennis shoes, I don't care. Guys wrestle in tennis shoes. Kofi Kingston wrestles in Nikes, you know. So that's fine with me. That doesn't bother me. But at least when you're going to have on, you can wear shorts. Just why not? I mean, I don't care if you come to the ring in basketball shorts. Just something athletic. I mean, I just can't wrap my head around the jean shorts still to this day. It's been, I don't know when he changed it. He debuted in 02. When he changed it to him, like 03, maybe 04.
Yeah, so, if I'm not mistaken, that same year he turned heel on Billy Kidman. So I think he was only on the matching boots and tights for a few months, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah. See, and he was even Fruity Pebble back then. He had a bunch of different colors of his tights when he debuted, if people don't remember that. But, the jean shorts never worked for me. I don't even like guys who come out and wrestle in just jeans. So, and then another, I guess, honorable mention I could say on my worst list is, this may be a little left field, but Jack Swagger, he's the one that, I like the singlet for his style and his body shape, you know, being a taller guy, he should wear a singlet, but it was always the pattern of it. I just never could get it with that. And then now he's got this shiny teal color. I mean, that's just awful. I don't like it now. So I like his haircut now. He's got a better hairstyle.
I think of Leave It to Beaver.
I don't know. I like the corny come over, but I don't like the teal. So I don't know if you have any honorable mentions you'd like to bring up.
Just a few. Just a couple that I was thinking of. Definitely the whole Cena thing. I think he even made mention of it that he wouldn't wear jeans anymore. That's why he started wearing camo for a while, and he went back to the jeans at WrestleMania. So I guess he just couldn't be without them for a while. He was just going through withdrawals or something. I did not like the American colored Jack Swagger singlet. Did not like that at all. I'm glad he went back to the normal type of look. Definitely Jericho would be a favorite for me. I like the sparkly. He's been a favorite as far as gear for a while. It's interesting that you said that how gear can define someone, which is absolutely true. When he went from a heel, he changed from pants to tights, just to keep that heel look, you know, and to change it, you know, change himself and just really go through a total heel transformation. And it's interesting that you say that. As far as old school, the first group that I thought of was. Anything that the Oddities had on was just incredibly terrible. And one mention that I do want to say before we close was the Triple H semis. Terrible. I mean, it was just, it was unbelievably ridiculous to me. He was known for, you know, when he became heel. I mean, of course, we know when he was a DX and he had the pants and the with the long tights. When he changed, you know, when he changed over and became with Stephanie McMahon, that's around the time when he really, you know, honed in his character and changed to the shorts, and which was good. Yeah. But from what is still rumored to this day, he had some type of banged up quad or hamstring, one of the two. Mm-hmm. And he was taped up, and he wanted to kind of cover his tape a little bit with the semis. Now, it was just that look on him was just ridiculous. And I believe he had that look during the whole Goldberg time, and when he beat Goldberg and had the title when, around that time, which was 03, if I'm not mistaken.
No, you're right.
September of 03 is when Goldberg beat him at Unforgiven and lost it at Armageddon. He had the. No, it wasn't just like semis. It wasn't like David Otunga. You know, it wasn't those type of semis. It wasn't like whoever else is known for his semis. Ziggler was for a second, but he's more on tights now. But it wasn't those. It wasn't those. It was just kind of like an extended version that just
like biker shorts.
That's a good way to explain it.
Early shorts. 90s biker shorts.
Looks like he should have been driving a Harley. He should have took Undertaker's character and drove a Harley down or with the vest or something. Was just really, really odd. So very good topic. It's proof that wrestling gear can make or break you. We're running out of time here, but feel free to email us cravewrestling@gmail.com to voice your best and worst wrestling gear, and we'll air it. There's a good chance that we may put it live on the air next week. And next week's Flavor of the Week topic is we're just going to talk about deceased wrestlers that died under the age of 40. And there's a good chance that I'm going to write an article about it on Bleacher Report before next Tuesday, just to give all of the listeners just a detailed analysis of what I feel. I'll probably just kind of highlight a few wrestlers that we may not have extended time on the show next week. So look out for that. Just go to Bleacher Report and type in Chris Featherstone. Search me. I just wrote an article yesterday about the 5 worst Intercontinental champions since the Attitude Era. It's got a lot of reaction on that, a lot of reads as well. Please follow us on Twitter at Crave Wrestling. News, trivia, chat. We'll be sure to keep you up with that, and as well as Facebook is www.facebook.com/Crave Wrestling, and there'll be some theme song of the days. There'll be some trivia and some chat as well. So we definitely appreciate all of your support and listening to us, and we will be back same time, 11 o'clock next Tuesday evening. Spread the word and let everybody know about Pancakes and Power Slams presented by Crave Wrestling. Goodbye.